time is now.
Okay, we're up to our limud of Chofetz Chaim every day is as a schus for the refuah shalema of Yosef Dober Chayla, Hishtav Refuah Shlema, Korov, Besorg Shal Chayla Yisrael. So I've got a note here, probably must have been from last time round or two times round previously, titled to this particular Seif of the Chofetz Chaim. We're in Hilchos Mechilos, Klal Tes, Seif Yudalad, which is the penultimate Seif in Sefer Chofetz Chaim. And so we've got one more to go, and then we came up the end of the Sefer. So the Chofetz, and the title that I've written here is, "It Wasn't Me, Sir." In other words, situation where somebody, let's say a teacher comes in, we mentioned this once before in Hilchos Lashon Hara, but a teacher comes into, let's say a teacher's in the class, he's teaching a class, and he's writing something on the blackboard, or today they write things on whiteboards, and he's got his back to the class, and somebody in the class flicked a piece of chalk at the teacher, hit him on the back of his neck, okay? So the teacher turns around angrily and says, "Who did that?" And nobody owns up. But there are quite a few boys in the class who know who did it. So the teacher then says, "Well, in that case, I'm going to give you all the detention and everybody's going to have to do 500 lines. Now, that's not fair. Right? Why should I suffer? Why should 20 boys in the class suffer? Because..." And each one of them, says the Chofetz Chaim, each one of them is not allowed to tell who it was. I don't know, maybe there's a separate heter for a teacher in a class, chinuch, I don't know. But in general situations, you're not allowed to tell the teacher who it was who flicked the piece of chalk at him. Okay? The reason why I say flick a piece of chalk is because we had a teacher, Rabbi Moshe Young, who used to be very, very good. He was writing on the board with a piece of chalk, and he would hear the boys sort of making a noise or messing around behind him, and suddenly he would turn around and flick the piece of chalk at the boy, and he was a very good shot. So that's why now this is the reverse. This is where a boy has flicked a piece of chalk at the teacher, and the teacher is saying, "Who did it?" And nobody wants to be a moiser. I don't want to sort of grass or to snitch on the other boy. On the other hand, everybody's going to suffer as a result. Am I mechuyev to accept suffering because of what one person did? So the Chofetz Chaim says that each boy is allowed to say individually, "It wasn't me, sir." In other words, each person can say, "It wasn't me." He can't say it was him. But right? He can't say it was him because that's rechilas. Because that's going to cause enmity between that boy and the teacher. The teacher's going to be annoyed with that boy. He's going to punish him. The boy's going to be upset. So it's rechilos to tell who did it. But you're allowed to say, I'm not mechuyev to suffer as a result of the fact that I can't, that I'm not allowed to speak rechilos. The Chofetz Chaim says, even in a situation, for instance, says the Chofetz Chaim, I mean, if the boy who actually did it also says, "It wasn't me, sir," then everyone's going to suffer. So the boys will have their go at him because they know what he did. But they're not allowed to tell the teacher. Says the Chofetz Chaim, and even in a situation where there are only two boys in the class, and therefore, when one boy says to the teacher, "It wasn't me, sir," it's quite obvious that it was him, sir. Says the Chofetz Chaim, Afal Pekein, he's allowed to say that. It's not rechilus for him to say, even though the implication or the result of what he says is that it wasn't me, but it was him. Nevertheless, as long as he's not speaking rechilus, again for the same principle, then he's not mechuyev to suffer. He's not mechuyev to take on himself the punishment. Yes, there were people in Chazal, there was Gemara about Shmuel HaKotan, and there are other Gemaras about situations where people, as a midas chasidus, took on themselves the punishment or the responsibility for something bad that happened, which they didn't actually do. Yeah, there's a Gemara about, I think, one of the Amoraim came in, he wanted to give a shear, and the place stank of garlic or something like that, and he said, who did it? And then one of the, what? Yeah. No, one of them volunteered and said, "It was me, sir," and it wasn't him. And the others knew about it, so they all got up and they all walked out. So that's Midas Chasidus. But the Chofetz Chaim says, you're allowed to say, "It wasn't me, sir," even if the implication is it was him, sir. Yeah, and even if there are only two of them, you're not mechuyev, but you're not allowed to say it was him, sir.
Started at the Thoroughway, Northwest London, Friday, Beis Shvat, 31st of January. Rabbi Benny Kershlita, Hard Hearts. This week's Rebbe is from the family of Orbit, the Sultana Sermon, Daniel Krasner, Yorkin, Racing, Morgan, Pithia, Kassel, Tadwes, Lots of Inchim, Device, the Morgan, Strabbe, Sloth, the Sklos, Sashvim, Sharim, and Melchamosh, Shachsul, Botrem, Shalom, and Hero.
It's always wonderful to be preparing for Shabbos in such a special way amongst such special people. It's also very unique to be able to have a shir which we're just surrounded by svarim. Mamish in every corner of this room, and I have the schus to sometimes learn here. And not only do we have svarim on the shelves, but Baruch Hashem, people sit and learn svarim. I don't know, I once heard from Rabbi Yaakov Feldheim, and he said, anybody who says you can't judge a book by its cover has obviously not attempted to sell svarim. But it's interesting because when you open a sefer, many of us like to get straight into the guts of the sugi or the subject that we're learning. But it's highly advisable, if you can, to try and read the haskamas, certainly attempt to read the hakdama. And you'll notice with a number of svarim, there are deep, deep lessons. For example, in the first lesson, the first message that they give, we just had here from the great teacher about Hilchos Loshon Hara. Have a look in the Sefer Avos Chesed, Chofetz Chaim. You get an idea from the very opening of the Pesicha, exactly what the Sefer is going to be about. Dorish Rabbi Samlai brings the Gemara and Sota, Torah Techilas Gemilas Chassadim, the Sefer Gemilas Chassadim. He sets the scene, he sets the tone for exactly what my Sefer is going to be about. Have a look at the Chovos Halavovos. He's learned Sefer Chovos Halavovos. If you're zeicher to get to the very end of Sefer Chovos Halavovos, you'll see the Mechaber finishes with the words, and of course, Chovos Halavovos is the obligations of my heart. Listen carefully to the words he uses right at the very end. V'yilorotzonim reifi, v'hegion libi lefonecho. The hegion libi should be in front of you, Eibishter. And he reminds everybody that the underlying message is the Chovos Halavovos, and he finishes with that message, the Nefesh HaChaim. Nefesh HaChaim, which is the literature approach to understanding the Kabbalah of the Neshama, and exactly what our tafkid in this world, and it's the science of how to connect physicality to spirituality. He opens up by says, "V'yivre Elokim es ha'odem b'tzalmai." You can see by the opening words the lessons which are there. The Ochas HaTzadikim. The Ochas HaTzadikim, interestingly enough, he starts with a posuk and he finishes with a posuk. Now, if you know what the Sefer Ochas HaTzadikim is about, analyzing different character traits, analyzing oneself, you can understand why he starts with a posuk. Es Elokim Yiro, Ves Mitzvosov Shomo, Kizeh Kola Adam. A Yid's got to fear HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they've got to keep mitzvahs. That's the whole entire purpose. And you go through Sfarim and you get an opportunity to really get to the depths of what it is that the person, the Mechaber, is trying to teach us. Just as a separate thing, it's also very, very valuable to read Haskamas. There's different sorts of Haskamas. There's certain Haskamas you mamish feel that the person has learnt through the Sefer, and they make their own notes on it as well. Very, very interesting. I was Zocha just now, was in Manchester in America, and I stayed with my good friend Rabbi Yehuda Yonah Rubinstein, and he gave me a couple of presents, and in the presents, a fascinating book that he wrote. He's involved in organizations which give comfort and help to people who are unfortunately orphans, and he wrote an amazing book all about dealing with loss as parents, etc., etc. A fascinating book. The Rosh Hashiva, Rabbi Avraham Gurvitz, writes Haskama for it. Mamash, the Haskama itself is a tremendous limit in how to look after orphans, etc., etc. And it's unfortunately a lot of people jump into the guts of the Sefer and they miss the beginning and they miss the end. The Shulchan Aruch, of course, is our lifeblood. It teaches us day by day life. And of course, we know it's divided into lots of different divisions. But the Aruch Chaim, which tells us how to behave from morning till night, has got the famous line which many people remind themselves of their early days in school. You have to get out of bed like a lion to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I was once dealing with some teenagers and they told me that I didn't translate it correctly. It says, it's not get out of bed like a lion, it's get out of bed. No, I like a lion. So I said, no, there's a slightly perverted translation. We're into lions, not lions. So we've got to make sure we make it very clear. But the Mechaber makes it very, very clear. With a Sefer which is dealing with early morning to late at night, which is taking us on the journey of washing our hands in the morning all the way through to brachas and tefillin, and it finishes with Shabbos, Yontav, and finally all the way to Chanukah and Purim. That Sefer has to take us through that journey, and it starts with you've got to get out of bed like a lion. And of course, we know we have to get out of bed like a lion, but I'm going to share with you a fascinating insight from this week's Sedra and try and connect it to that as well. What's also extraordinary is how the Ramah finishes Sefer of the Shulchan Aruch HaOrachaim. V'tov lev mishta tamid. A good-hearted person is constantly partying. Now, the young man in bed who wanted his lie-in, maybe that was why he needed a lion, because he was constantly partying. It's a very interesting way to finish a sefer on about our daily life, that the Tov Lev from Mishta Tomid is constantly partying. It needs a little bit of understanding, but we want to understand the beginning of the end of every single sefer. By the way, just before we go on our journey, the Rambam, his Halacha Sefer, Yad HaChazaka, does anybody remember how that one starts? It starts with the letters Yud, He, Vav, Ke, as is often found in many, many Sforim at the beginning. Yesod HaYesodus V'Amud HaChochmas is to know that there's a God in the world and all that our responsibilities towards it. The foundation of all foundation and the pillar of wisdom is. And that's how he begins his lessons about Halacha. Now, I know we may have one or two lawyers amongst us here today. Could be retired lawyers or active lawyers. Yeah. Senior lawyers. Retired. But nothing personal, but I don't know if you've got works on jurisprudence which have the same introductory. So what is the lesson of the Aruch Chaim? What is Aruch Chaim in Shulchan Aruch? What's the lesson that the Mechaber starts with that powerful obligation to get up in bed like a lion, and the Ramah finishes it with a happy-hearted person, this person who's constantly parting. So, with your permission, I'd like to go a little bit of a journey. And the Mephoshim point out that if you analyze the Pasuk which is brought by the Ramah at the end, there's two parts for the Pasuk. This first part of the Pasuk is, Kol Yimei Oni Royim. All the days of a poor person are evil. That's a very difficult to understand statement. All the days of a poor man, a poor person, they're bad. And then the pasuk goes on, but a good-hearted person, in other words, it's the connection with the first part, v'tov lev mishtei tamid. So we're seeing it in reflection or connection. Or in all the days of a poor person are bad, but a good person's feasts perpetually. Now, by the way, just to point out, the Gra says we should understand what's the pshat of a good person feasts perpetually. The Gra says a good person is constantly happy. They're constantly in a full sense of positivity, energy. They're besimcha. Sense of growth, a sense of development, a sense of inner joy. What's the connection between the first part of the Pasuk that poor people are infantially very unhappy, the life is very bad, and the second part, a good-hearted person is always happy and always at the party? So again, the Vilna Gaon draws our attention to a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. And sometimes, as the Mesillas Yesharim tells us in his introduction, the things that we know are often forgotten. The things which we should really understand as the aleph base of our life are often ignored or put to the side. And there's a famous Mishnah, Ben Zoma Oimer, Ezu Chochem, and Baruch Hashem is one of those Mishnayos that everybody knows, including in that line is Ezuhu Osher, who is rich. And we have the famous answer, Hasamech Bechelka, somebody who's happy with their lot. I remember a wedding, my father-in-law, Mr. Gostruk, Zichron Levrocha, he was giving his drosha, and he says, Ezehu, Oshe, who's wealthy? Somebody's happy with their lot. He looks at his children and says, and I'm very happy with my little lot. But it's a very interesting concept, what it is, and I thank the Almighty for that. What does it mean, somebody's happy with their lot, they're rich? Says the Vilna Gaon, let's just stop for a minute. That means wealth is dependent on a person happy with their lot, which means poverty means somebody's not happy with their lot. Very interesting tight, a push at the tight. You're rich because you're happy with your gut. You're poor, our definition of poverty is you're not happy with what you've got. Interesting touch. And even though it's a very obvious way of looking at it, it's a surprise for many, many people, of course, because just like when it comes to wealth, they would consider that wealth is amassing of great fortune, but the Mishnah reminds us it's not that. It's about how you deal with the blessings you have. Likewise, poverty means you could be a multimillionaire. A multimillionaire. Frightening statement, this. A multimillionaire, but nevertheless, you're ultimately poor because you're not happy with what you've got. As Chazal tells us, you've got 100, you want 200. So he touches up, all the days of a poor person are bad. All the days of a poor person are bad. Why? Because you could be a rich person, but because your poverty in mind and poverty in attitude and poverty in your character as a result of that, it's all bad. It's all bad. Extraordinary statement. But a good-hearted person is besimcha perpetually. How is this a lesson for the sedras that we are involved in? So there are many, many different ideas that we could share in these extraordinary sedras that we're zoicha to be part of. But I'll share with you one. Vayomer Moshe, Koyamah Hashem, so says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Kechatzos HaLaila. Moshe Rabbeinu is speaking to Paro, and he's saying to Paro, the next Makkah is going to happen approximately midnight, and Yetzei B'Soch Mitzrayim, I'm going to go out to the Egyptians, and the Torah goes on to describe exactly what's going to happen. And Paro, your name is on the list. Umeis Kol B'chol Be'etz Mitzrayim, Mi'B'chol Paro, Ayeshev, etc. Everybody's going to be there. Famously, when the event actually takes place, the language which is used is not kechatzos, but rather bechatzos. And Rashi is famously bothered, as I'm sure all of you have spoken about and think about a lot, Rashi is famously bothered by why the Torah has to say kechatzos. Why does the Torah have to say, at approximately midnight, Pharaoh, this is what's going to happen? Because the nature of human beings is, Rashi says, that the astronomers, the astrologers, the magicians are going to come up and say, he says he's God, and he runs the world. He says he's going to do it at midnight. He was 5 minutes late, he was a quarter an hour early, and therefore, what a load of rubbish. I mean, I'm simplifying what Rashi says, but basically that's what we're saying. That Moshe had to say approximately, because somebody's going to get it slightly wrong as a result of getting it slightly wrong. It's a very, very strange concept. A very strange concept. Baruch Hashem, we were zocha that our eldest grandson just got engaged to somebody from Switzerland. And somebody was telling me a little bit about the Swiss. And they said to me, by the way, you should know that if the train's late in Switzerland, that's because you're clock's wrong. Just to understand how things work over there. The Rabbeinu Sholem, Moshe Rabbeinu, has to say to Paro, Kachatzi, because there are people out there, the Eibishter doesn't get time wrong. The Eibishter's 100%, in fact, when it happens, it happens clearly on time. But people's perception of the time is going to be slightly off, and as a result of that, you've got to change it. Now, you have to, my Rosh Hashiva, Mendel Weinbach, Zichron Levrocha, used to point out there's a dramatic change in the world as to how people tell time. In the old days, they used to tell time by looking outside of themselves. Right? During the day, they used to see where the sun is. It's midday. Those in the Duff will follow Eidos as a how many hours before midday can we allow that to be a confusion for people who say it's midday or after midday? Okay. Midnight's a little bit more complicated. The Rosh Hashiva used to say to us, fascinating how society has changed. In the olden days, if I wanted to know what time it was, I'd look outside of myself. And he also pointed out, if you wanted to know where you were, you'd also look outside of yourself. Sunsets, sunrises, the moon, in the evening, the stars, where's the, etc., etc. You look at, says, and then there came along the phenomena of watches. And the first watches were, of course, analog watches. With an analog watch, you have the ability to look at it, but you can see there's a past, present, and future. He says, and now, Dave, everything is digitalized, and therefore everybody's just looking in the present. He said, originally, we used to tell time by looking outside of yourself. It's a very deep concept. Where I am in time, where I am in geographically. And now we live in a world which is all about now, 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 which the seconds ticking away, but with, unfortunately, many people not reflecting on the past. By the Amish there, there's a past, present, and future, but when he tells us it's now, it means now. And the strange thing about this is the last of all the makkas. And the makkah has been preceded by HaKadosh Baruch Hu showing the entire globe. The Egyptians are brought to their feet, the economy is destroyed. HaKadosh Baruch Hu can change everything as he wants, when he wants, how he wants. And this is the final makkah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has proved himself time and time again. And you're saying, Kechatzi, because maybe you're going to have a Ribono Shleilam. What more proof do you need? And the answer, my friends, are, if you have a negative, it's impossible mindset, if you have a mindset that there's no Eibishter, if you have a mindset that you don't want a Kodesh Baruch Hu to exist, even with all the proofs in the world which stand in front of you, then unfortunately you're not going to listen to it. Because a person's mindset, a person's attitude, is the driving force of all. The Rabbeinu Bechaya, interestingly enough, in his introduction to every parsha, and if you really want to hard work, you should learn the introductions of the Rabbeinu Bachya on each sedra. He starts always so with a posuk in Mishlei. Posuk in Mishlei. And you can learn Mishlei by learning the Rabbeinu Bachya. Extraordinary. What's the posuk he chooses for this week's sedra? The Rabbeinu Bachya for this week's sedra chooses Ashrei Odom Mefachei Tomid, a well-known posuk. And he goes on to tell us that somebody who has a hard heart, or better, somebody who has a stubborn heart, will fall into ra, will fall into negativity. Why? Well, he obviously starts with Paro, who started with a self-inflicted hard heart. If you don't see what's in front of you, if you don't open your eyes what the reality in front of you is, you're going to lose out. You're going to lose out. A very powerful language which is used. Somebody who's stubborn of heart, they're going to fall into difficult situations. Your stubbornness is the thing that's causing you the problem. And in terms of the Mitzrim, their stubbornness to accept the Eivishta, their stubbornness to accept that Klal Yisrael, God, is showing the rest of the world that he created the world, that he runs the world, that's going to be your downfall. So you can understand the connection between getting back to the Mechaber, interestingly enough. I once heard a fascinating idea, which is the people who are happy and they feel a sense of inner purpose and inner joy and are honest and real about themselves, they find it very easy to get out of bed in the morning. They find it very easy to get out of bed in the morning. People who are unhappy find it difficult to get out of bed in the morning. Fascinating suggestion. The Shulchan Aruch says, get out of bed like a lion. Fight for it. Go for it, because you've got things to achieve. Overcome your negative mindset. Overcome your hard heart. Realize that life has given precedence, and then your entire life is going to be partying. It's going to be simcha. Now, obviously, life is a bit more complicated and difficult than that. But people go through immense difficulties and immense pain, and it's not for us to judge how people deal with it. But what an approach. What an approach is. that you can learn all of halacha, but the underlying of halacha is the attitude that you have, your mental mindset, the ability to want to change, the ability to want to grow and develop. And you see this fascinatingly. The Torah starts in this week's Sedra by telling us, who is it that the Nisim are for? So it starts by telling us, Kani ichbadite es liboy, Uleman tesaper ba'ozne bincha ben bincha, es asher es alti b'mitzrayim. I want you to be able to see yourselves in Mitzrayim, what's happening, so you can pass this on to the future generation. Ve'esosai ves asher samti bom, v'yodatem ki ani Hashem. The miracles in Mitzrayim weren't just for the Egyptians. The miracles in Mitzrayim for all Yidden, for all eternity. And sadly, four-fifths of Klal Yisrael, when the door was open and the opportunity was given to them in this week's Sedra, in Choshech, four-fifths of Klal Yisrael decided that actually it's better to stay here than it is to leave. That is the most frightening description of how hard-hearted a person could become, how obstinate a person become, how stubborn a person become when the door is open and the opportunity is given and they choose to live in the misery of Mitzrayim. And you'll notice that something very interesting. In this week's Sedra, we have the obligation to remember daily Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim. Just want to choose three things briefly about the power of Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim in our daily life to impact on all that we have. Just by way of introduction, I once had a student, and she was at university, and when she went to university, she decided she was going to join with other girls who and she's going to keep kashrus. She came from a family, unfortunately they weren't keeping kosher home. She's going to keep a kosher home. And Baruch Hashem, she was successful and she got more and more involved. But then comes the time for the winter holidays. Mm-hmm. And she has to convince mummy that, can I eat? I'll have cold, mummy, don't worry, I'll bring my own pots and pans. And the mother was very hard-hearted, if I can put it hard. And she was a very non-accepting person. Very, very not accepting. And we tried everything. We really did, and counseled her and advised her. And eventually I said to the girl, have you tried davening? Like, we've got to daven. We need nissen. We need nissen. So she said, no, I don't want to bother HaKadosh Baruch. I said, this is exactly what prayer is about. We want you to bother HaKadosh Baruch. You know, it's no problem. Say, no, I don't try. So we had a little lesson in Emunah and Betochen, and I said to her, look, we've just been learning about Yetzias Mitzrayim. I said, do you believe that the Makkos took place? So she said, yes. We went into some detail. And then I took her on to these Sedras. Kriyas Yamsuf, we described in detail. I said, do you believe it? Yeah. I believe HaKadosh Baruch Hu did all of those things. So I said to her, well, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu's done all of those things, then I think he can help you with your problem at home with your mother. She said, you haven't met my mother, Rabbi. But anyway, the point is that people can become so stubborn. Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim is found, and of course, the Sefer Chinuch points out, why is there so much repetition of Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim? The Odom Nifl Lefi Pilosof. There's a lot to be spoken about in this, but I want to just share with you three things which impact on our daily lives. The first one is the Aseres Hadibros. The introduction HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us today when we read Anochi is because I took you out of Mitzrayim. That's why it's a living God. God's involved in our daily life in all that we do. And even though intellectually we know it, we have to realize that's the headline of our Torah. That's the headline of our mitzvahs. That I'm HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And of course, the person who knows that I'm HaKadosh Baruch Hu jumps out of bed like a lion because they realize this is the only day, there's never going to be a day like this today. I've got to use it to be an Eved of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Anochi calls out to me. And look what he did to the Mitzrayim, look what he did to the Mitzrayim. And I am going to leave my Mitzrayim. As Rabbi Dess explains, Mitzrayim means you're hemmed in. You're in a Mokam Meitzah. And just like you're physically in a Mokam Meitzah, we are often in an intellectual, an emotional Mokam Meitzah. We have to be able to accept HaKadosh Baruch Hu can do anything, and he shows himself he did everything. Zeicher Yetzias Mitzrayim, we're going to make Kiddush. Shabbos Kodesh is a day off where we can stop and contemplate and meditate and consider whether my thoughts are ruling me or whether I can fight against them. Am I b'mishte tamid? Am I a person who has a positive outlook on life? Some people, unfortunately, are so negative. They can only see negativity. They can always... Everything's about, maybe this is going to happen, maybe that's going to happen. I met somebody like that, and they went to the careers officer for advice. What should I do with my life? And he said, I think you should become the chief risk officer for an insurance company. Chief risk officer for an insurance company. Because everything that you can imagine goes wrong, right? Shabbos Kodesh is the acceptance, the Zeichel Yetzias Mitzrayim, is that Kodesh Baruch Hu can change anything and everything, and it's a day where I can contemplate and I consider if I can change myself as well. And then in this week's Seder, we've got the power of Tefillin. I remember many years ago, I had the schus of taking a student to Eretz Yisrael who had Tefillin when he was bar mitzvahed, but hadn't been wearing them as often as they should, and unfortunately the quality of them weren't so good. And Baruch Hashem, he said, I'm going to yeshiva for a few weeks. I'd like to buy a new pair of tefillin. Baruch Hashem, we ordered tefillin. We went to pick them up from the sofa. And he said to me, Rabbi Kirsch, I understand that the best time to wear tefillin is with nates. I said, yes. He says, and since we're in Yerushalayim, I understand must be the best place to go is the Kosel. He said, would you come with me tomorrow morning to the Kosel? We'll daven nates together. It's a long story, but I want to share with you one extraordinary thing, which was, I watched this 23-year-old put on tefillin, his new pair of tefillin, by the Kosel, in preparation with Nates, with all of the minyanim going on, and the great noise in the background, and I watched him put on this tefillin, and I said, I wish I could put on my tefillin every day like he's putting them on today. I wish I could. Like a parent cherishing a little baby, a child. And when you learn the Pesukim about tefillin, you have to remind yourself that tefillin is directly connected to Zeichel Yetzias Mitzrayim. Do you see us Mitzrayim? And one of my Rebbeim used to teach us, he used to say as follows. Every morning when you put on the tefillin, you put the tefillin on the yad, famously. And as Chazal say in this week's Siddur, the weaker hand, being submissive to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in that respect. And of course, vice is the heart. And of course, you have the tefillin shel rosh, which is on the head. And he says, part of our daily lesson in life is to make sure we connect our heads to our hearts to our actions. Our heads to our hearts to our actions. He says, very often we do all of the actions, but our head's moving in one direction, our emotions are moving in another direction, and as a result of that, we don't do our actions properly. It's Zeichel Yetzias Mitzrayim. It's Yetzias Mitzrayim. We can get out of Mitzrayim. And we put on our tefillin to remind ourselves. To bind ourselves to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is to marry our heart, our hand, and our head together. And therefore, when we see the power of the message of the Rebbein Bechaya, that it's our hard heart which is holding us back. And not only Paro, but all of us. We can understand the connection to the beginning of the Or HaChaim and the end. You get out of bed like a lion. You have a positive attitude that I can overcome and I can be successful. And Baruch Hashem, the Eibishter will give you us all the bracha that our hearts will be the Mishteh Tomit. Good chance. Oh, you're next.
Thank you. Let's go to the latter part of the Seder, if we may. I'll share with you that there was a famous Poisek Gud Lador, mostly known in England because he was a very prolific Av Bezen, namely Reb Chaskel Abramsky, who at the end of his life went to Bnei Barak, retired there, and I believe he was also a Magachi in Slabodka, yeshiva in Bnei Barak, and he was quickly renowned there too for his goyness and Torah. There was a gentleman who came to Reb Chaskel Abramsky this week's Seder, Pasha's boy, and he said to him, Achaba Shvere Kasher, So Chassel says, what's the problem? There is a medrash that says that Makas Tzfadea, there was an ongoing feud between the land of Kush and the land of Mitzrayim. And not dissimilar to what's going on in the world today, where there's fights over borders, and everybody is busy with the various different potential borders of the state of Israel. There, again, Egypt and Kush were fighting, and Egypt was quite a superpower, and Kush was perhaps a weaker one. And when the Mark of Tzfadea came, something remarkable happened. If you looked at the exact place where the frogs reached, it went across the borders. So if you flew in a plane, you could see the green all the way to the borders, and that defined very, very clearly from the Rebbeinu Shlomo, that in case you had any doubts about whose property this was, the frogs have defined. We reach exactly and inflict pain on the Egyptians up until the line of their borders. And thereafter, the country belongs to Kush. Fine. We know this medrash. But lo and behold, this week said that you got the marker of Arbe. And there again, it says, V'chisu esayinu uretz, v'lo yuchal liro eses uretz. So if you did take a helicopter or plane across the Egypt at that time, and you saw the masses and billions and trillions of locusts that descended on Mitzrayim, you'd have seen a black outline, which again defines the borders. And the Medrash mentions again in Medrash Rabbah that there was a fight between Kush and between Mitzrayim, and there came the Arbe. And if you looked at where the Arbe landed, it went right up into the border of the edge of Mitzrayim and defined exactly whose land belonged to who. So he asked Praskla Bramsky Steinisch, why do you need two medrushim to tell you the same thing? Once you define the border by the Tzfadaya, then you know exactly where we are with regards to Kush and where we are with regards to Egypt. And Rav Paskal Abramsky thought so too. He reflected. He said, weißt, ich frage gut. And I suggest to you, your Schleim is to a größt Guren, and his name is the Chibina Ruf. Go to your Schleim and ask him. This fellow wasted no time, and he went to your Schleim. Goes to the Chibina Ruf, and he says to him, he was now Chaskel Abramsky in Ben Ibrak, that's where he lives, and he told him to present this question to you. And he asked him, Medrash 1, Medrash 2, borders, Kush, Mitzrayim, etc., without missing a beat. The Heilige Chibina Ruf says to him, the answer is simple, because today, he didn't use exactly this example, but President Trump, when he wants to make a border, so he builds a wall of 30 foot high, he doesn't let any Hispanics into his country, and he makes sure that you know clearly where you're allowed to go to and where you're not allowed to go to, where the border is. Once upon a time, it wasn't like this. If you wanted to know where the border was, so they had a simple way of doing this. No barbed wire or anything like this, or radars or watchtowers. They used to plant trees, and the trees used to go along the edge of the border, and there you knew exactly where the one country stopped and one country started. And that was the way it went. However, in Mitzrayim, something happened after Tzfadea was defining the borders of Kush and Egypt, came along the Makkah of Burot, and Burot says clearly, "V'chol eitz asude shibe, smashed to smithereens anything that looked like a tree, and anything that was growing there." And consequently, all the trees that were there and had defined already the border were demolished and annihilated, decimated. There's no more borders. He says, came the Abbe, and they said, that's okay, we'll sort it out again, just in case you've got any doubts. Came the Abbe, and in one black swoop, you went to the plane, and you could see the lines of Mitzrayim and Kush, unquestionably. Kev? The man wasted no time, and he went back to Bnei Brak. Came to Rav Chaske Abramsky, and he says, nu, what's the result? So he explained the answer, detail, trees, borders, walls, didn't say about Trump, I tell them all the rest of it. Chaske Abramsky smiles, shame. It's very nice, but where does he take this from? He got that smach for such a But this guy was a stickler, busybody, and he's a troublemaker, and he didn't waste any time, and he goes straight back to Yerushalayim, and he says to Chibin Ruf, he gets to into him again, he goes inside, and says, yo, who's this? Says, Rabbi Rav Chaske, and I told you, answer, no. So he said, and his reaction was, where do you take it from? Shabin Ruf again, without missing a beat, says to him, ich nehme es offen a pusik in Tehillim. Where? Says in Kifhai. Says there clearly, speak depicts all the makkas, and then it says the Vayishabai eight Gavulo. So you've got it clearly there. They smashed the Rebbein Shlodom with the Bura, the eights, the trees, which define Gavul on the borders. So reminder, you know what the purpose of the... Whoa. Goes back to the Naibarak. He's not finished. Yeah? And he goes to the Chibina Roof. He goes to the Rav Chaske Abramsky. Rav Chaske Abramsky is like, no. So he's very happy to deliver the goods, and he says to him, "Is it so often a pusik in Tehillim?" So now Chaske is already got his ears poked up. He says, "Vashaba eitz gevulo." He hopped straight away what he meant. And then Rav Chaske says, "As the Chibin Ruv is a guen benigle benister that he knew kol ha-Torah killer, that was no question in my mind." Aber sie nach Alamden in Tehillim auch hört, das hat mich nicht gewusst. And so that, happy note, was the answer to the Josh. Noch ein Wort oder nicht? Huh? Tell me. Because he's not here yet, sir. Okay, so then, should we stop at this point? One more. Yeah, okay. I'll tell you very briefly. You know, he said, he spoke before earlier about the associations between okay. I'll go through a vote which is very very beautiful, but I'll do it quickly because of the limited time. This week, Sedra, you got presented with a shala of Dabenu Boznehu Om Veishali Ish Meisrei Ish Meisrei Iso Kesef Akeilim, and now you've got the question number one. Why is the Lushen of Nu? I knew Elo Lushen Bakusha. If I'll tell any friend of mine, go down to Barclays Bank and pick up 10 million quid, please do me a favor, I beg of you, go. Please? Out of fear, he's running there, you don't have to catch him, he'll be as fast as it'll be. He'll be in the bank before you could bat an eyelid. So why does it have to say the Lushen of Nu? And the Yidden are asked to go and pick up jewelry, gold, silver, money. And the second reason, the question is, the Rashi says there, the famous Rashi, Shelo yoyma oise tzadik, vavode mini oise maba maesuno, kiem bohem. Vara kan yetze bechish gudel, loy kiem bohem. So, that's why you have to make sure that you have to cash in. The first question is, you're speaking about Avraham Avinu. You've got the wrong bloke, because Avraham Avinu is the one which was this nasa be'ese nisyoinus. He went through a test where the Rebbeinu Shlolem told him to leave everything, go out of your country, lech lechume, out lechume, melat lechume. He gets there, then finally the place where he's gone to, there's a hunger, and where he left was fine. His wife is abducted once by Paro, and he doesn't have any problems. His wife is abducted again afterwards by Avimelech. He doesn't have any problems. The Rebbeinu Shlolem tells him, go take your child and shecht him, and take him alai lo oilu, and he doesn't have any problems. He has got no questions on the Rebbeinu Shlolem. And now, because of a few bob, he's going to say to the Rebbeinu Shlolem, hello, we had an agreement, no? It was in the, wie heißt es, Brisbane, Absurim, Bavudim, Bini, Oysim, Abam, Eschuno, Kiembohem. That part of it you fulfilled. Va'achakach, Aitzir, Cheshkudel, where's the dosh? And that's the man who's going to ask this question, the person who was Mestasa Basura Bisyonis. And then you've got the million-dollar question is that the Rebbeinu Shlolem has to give Klal Yisrael the money. You know why? Because I promised Avraham Avinu that I'm going to give him the money. Is he ready? Okay. So, Maile, the question is, if that's the case, only because the Rebbeinu Shlolem promised Avraham Avinu, that's why he has to give him the money, and the Rebbeinu Shlolem on his own back does not have to. He said, "V'achar kein yaitze b'chish gudel." You promised them that they will go out b'chish gudel. So that's the reason why you have to, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu emes v'chosum emes, and the Rebbeinu Shlolem is pure truth. So how can he possibly not? And the answer to that, I'll give you another time, because the Rabbi Duna is here, and we have to go
Thank you. We had once where you spoke at a schedule. You've done it before.
Yeah.